Cincinnati Edition for a Sunday morning. I'm Mark Purcell. On this month's Looking Up with Dean Regas, Alan Alda. Everyone knows Alan Alda from his long and distinguished career as an actor, writer, and director, but he has a strong passion for science and, more importantly, helping scientists better communicate with their students and the public. Alda has taken his passion to Stony Brook University in New York, where he founded the Center for Communicating Science and established the annual Flame Challenge, explaining science to sixth graders. This year's topic, what is time? Alan Alda is on the phone with Dean Regas to explain.
Well, good morning. Thanks again for joining us.
Good. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, now, in addition to your continued acting career, which is doing really flourishing right now, you've taken on a variety of vocations. So tell us a little bit about your latest day job.
It's turning into a day job. You're right. I help scientists communicate better. And I spend a lot of my time and a lot of thinking on it, trying to come up with ideas that are unusual. For instance, at the Center for Communicating Science, we teach scientists to improvise in a similar way to what we would do if we were working with actors, except we're not trying to turn scientists into actors. We're getting them to the point where they can connect with their audiences in a personal, vivid, clear way. And it really has a wonderful effect on them. And then another kind of unusual thing we did was to start this contest called the Flame Challenge, which really got popular the first time we did it last year. It was a contest for scientists to explain what a flame is to 11-year-olds so the 11-year-olds could understand it. And it was judged by real 11-year-olds.
Wow.
And that really had a great effect.
Wow. And so where did that spring from, that idea?
It came from my not knowing what a flame was when I was 11 years old and being fascinated with the flame. And I asked the teacher, what's going on in a flame? What is that? She said, it's oxidation. And that was it.
That's all you need to know, right?
Yeah, right. It's probably all she knew, and she didn't want to go into anything else. So I realized what a poor example of science communication that was many years later, and I started this contest. It spread around the world. We had 800 scientists sending in entries, and 6,000 11-year-olds judged them. And the kids just loved being able to judge the entries.
Oh, I can imagine.
They were very serious about it. You know, they said there's not. They would, if the entry was too short, like just a half a sentence, they'd say there's no information in this. We want to understand this. Don't just give. Some people actually sent in something equivalent to it's oxidation, and which isn't enough. But some were very imaginative. The winner sent in an animated video that he animated himself. He acted in it. He wrote a song for it. And the kids were crazy about it.
And so that emerged as a clear winner.
Yeah, it was by far the winner. And then this year we asked the kids to come up with a question generated by contemporary 11-year-olds, not the one I was many years ago. And they came up with a much tougher question. What is time?
Ooh, how do you do that for 11-year-olds? I don't know.
How do you do it for anybody?
Exactly.
I'm not sure Einstein had the really clear answer to that. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. And I think the point of this is not to teach kids science, even though it seems like that. The point is to show scientists how hard it is to communicate a complex idea and to get them curious about how to do it better. And in the process, the kids also learn, so you get a bonus. But the main effort is to put scientists in touch with a difficult problem in communication and see how they do and see if they get curious about getting better at it.
And is that your main message when you're teaching this, is that you try to teach your students, say, you got to explain this to an 11-year-old. Can any scientific process be explained to an 11-year-old?
Well, you know, there are several scientists who were credited with having said, if you can't explain it to a child, you don't understand it yourself. So, I mean, I'm not sure they all said it, but Einstein is credited with saying that, the great Richard Feynman. But I do know Feynman once had to give a class to freshmen about quantum mechanics. And he finally said, you know, I can't do it. I must not understand it well enough myself if I can't explain it to freshmen. So there is this understanding among some of the brightest that it ought to be able to be put in simple terms, at least an introduction to it. And then you can say, look, it gets more complicated than that. I can go into more depth and with more technical language if you want to and if you're ready for that. But at least an introduction to it so you can sort of wade in and get your toes in the water.
Well, now let's get back to an 11-year-old Alan Alda. If we can go back to him. As a kid, what would you have any scientific wow moments, these experiences that you really remember that stuck with
well,
you?
Well, even before I was 11, when I was about six, I was wandering around the house mixing things to see if I could get them to do something and hopefully explode.
always. You want to do that.
Yeah, but fortunately, I couldn't reach the shelf where the explosive ingredients were on. It was too short. But I was an amateur inventor. I would invent things and make drawings of them and models of them and things like that. So I was always interested in science. But I can't remember. It's a good question you ask, because I think you're asking me if I have a memory of a good explanation that really straighten things out for me.
Your origin story of how you became from a transition from TV star and movie star to a science education advocate.
Well, it really was beginning to read a lot of science, and was later in my 20s when I started reading Scientific American magazine, and read since then I've read every issue, and a lot of other journals too. Because it's fun for me. I really enjoy it. It's one of the most, I did a program on television for 11 years called Scientific American Frontiers, and I must have interviewed about 700 scientists during that time. And to me, one of the most beautiful things in the world, one of the most intriguing things in nature, is watching another smart brain at work. And I just love talking to these people because they were so dedicated and passionate, and so smart at the same time.
I'm speaking with Alan Alda, a longtime TV and movie star, and also now working for the Center for Communicating Science at Stony Brook University. Now, you mentioned, you've interviewed so many scientists over these years and talked to lots of people. Do you think we have this innate scientific nature in us, or this curiosity that we have?
Well, I think kids do. The smallest baby is trying to figure out the world around him or her, and they're experimenting all the time. If I put my finger here, what happens? That's why you got to plug up the electrical sockets. And that's just pure curiosity. And the whole human race is typified by that kind of curiosity. That's how we got to the moon, and we're getting to other planets. We just can't not get enough to satisfy that curiosity. But we've become so good at so many things. We're so specialized in our knowledge of so many areas that I read constantly that there's no one person who can know everything that's known anymore. Isaac Newton probably knew everything there was to know about science when he was alive, but that seems to be impossible now. There's just too much to know. So it kind of is important for everybody, ordinary people in the public, legislators in Congress, and even other scientists, to have science spoken to them in a way that is clear and vivid, so that they can have a hint of what's known, at least a hint, and probably an even deeper understanding than that if the communication is good. We all need it because we're living in a world of science, but the best reason, I think, is it's just so exciting. It's really fun.
And I think that's what we need to do, is to communicate that fun. And and it is a very big challenge, especially with all the different media out there. What do you think is the best medium for science communication?
I don't know. It was very interesting. When we did the first round of the Flame Challenge last year, we just said it's open to any kind of entry, written or animated or visual and sound. We just open it up. It turned out that the videos that were made so trumped the verbal explanations that this year our contest is divided into two categories. One is written, and the other is visual, because it looks like perhaps this new generation is so accustomed to interacting with video that they just naturally go to that, and they have a little less patience for the words. So it could be some combination of words and video.
We really appreciate you talking with us this morning.
Well, thank you. Thanks for talking with me about it. I appreciate it.
I've been speaking with Professor Alan Alda, founder of the Center for Communicating Science at Stony Brook University, about the 2013 Flame Challenge, sponsored by the American Chemical Society and the American Association for the Advancement of Science. More information about the Flame Challenge can be found on our website, wvxu.org. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Dean Regas.